Hey folks, it's the Sisters with the Confessions of a Reluctant Caregiver show on UK Health Radio. Today's episode is part of our special series, Heroes Caring for Heroes. We're partnering with the Fisher House Foundation to highlight our brothers and sisters in care who are courageously sharing their caregiving journeys for both the seen and unseen scars of military life and war. Now, let's jump right in to today's hero confession.
Well, good morning, my beautiful sister.
Well, good morning, Natalie.
It's so nice to see you again.
It is. And we've got a great guest today. I'm excited.
Right. We got a guest and she is like awesome.
She is. I am ready to get rolling.
Oh, me too. You know, I like how you just said, I'm ready to get rolling.
I know it. I'm like, this is a good story. We don't
this
have
is a good story. Don't waste our time with talking about us. JJ, tell us about the amazing Casey Kelly.
Okay, so I mean, this is an important series, Heroes Caring for Heroes, and she's got a lot of heroes in her family, so let me tell you. So today, guys, we have Casey Kelly with us, and Casey grew up in Southern California. She has a background in environmental science and education, and she also has a heart to serve. She served in AmeriCorps, and she worked in the nonprofit sector before meeting her husband, Stephen. We're going to talk about how they met, because that's a really fun part of their story. Today, she's a wife. She is a mom to two boys, four dogs, three cats, and 14 chickens. And she is a caregiver. Casey says her caregiving journey is slightly ambiguous. Stephen was in an IED explosion in 2012. She began advocating for his care as soon as he arrived home from Afghanistan, but did not officially become his caregiver until he was medically retired in October of 2012. In the 2 years since, Casey has worked through Stephen's TBI and PTSD diagnosis that mirrors dementia at times, the loss of a tremendous support person, and homeschooling her two boys with some interesting distractions that actually keep the family focused. Casey, we are so glad you're here today.
Thanks for having me.
Casey looks, so, if you get to, you should watch this on YouTube because Casey looks so beautiful today. And JJ and I, we are not so much.
This is the first time I don't get to dress up very often.
Oh, I love it.
So yeah, we're gonna be posting like Casey everywhere because like, wow. And she's a caregiver. She has all these people that she's responsible for and all these things that she does. And we're like, wow. So she's pulled it together. So we are ready. So we would be remiss starting any of this by not letting you tell the background. We're not going to jump forward this time. We're going to say we must hear about you and your husband and how this story all started.
So Stephen and I met while he was playing third wheel on a pity date. I didn't want to go on. My girlfriends had to push me out the door. I was that against going to see this guy. And he asked me to meet him in the local Walmart.
Oh, wow. Walmart.
Yeah, in the fishing section. Yeah. And
I love the story.
Right? And he was toting Stephen with him. So that's how we met. And Stephen knew how absolutely uncomfortable I was with this guy. I didn't want to be around him. And he just made me laugh the entire night. And I was, you know, into that. I was like, yeah, I think I've found him. And he was a third wheel.
And you found your lobster. Now, was Stephen was in the military at that point, wasn't he?
He had just joined. So this was his first duty station. He had just arrived. He'd only been there for a month.
Where were you guys?
Washington State. So we were, I was going to school in Olympia. I was going to Evergreen. Mm-hmm. And he was stationed at Fort Lewis McChord.
Okay.
And he's from upstate New York. So how the two of us. Yeah. So opposite sides of the country, Southern California, the most Southern you can get, you know, Northern New York, how the two of us met in the most random place, Washington State of all places.
And then she ended up in Virginia. So that's going to be entirely.
Because Virginia's for lovers.
That's true.
But, you know, but you guys were puppies too when you met, right? You were in, how old were you?
25. Both of us are, we were babies.
You were puppies.
Babies.
I mean, in the military world, we were old, but
Yeah, that's true because your most of your enlistees come in at, so that's interesting. He enlisted at what, then at 25, 24, 25.
24. Yeah.
So I have to know, what was the delay? What did he do from 18 to 24? Was he just messing around in New York, living his best life? You don't have to say all the deets, but you know.
Literally messing around.
Okay, so
Yeah.
he just, so something happened that he was like,
Yeah.
that's it. I'm gonna do, well, 2012. Okay.
He actually joined the service to support his kids. So he
Wow.
wasn't, yeah. So he has children outside of our marriage, and he could not financially support them because he didn't have a degree. So he was just like, okay, what do I do? So I'm going to join the army to make sure my kids are taken care of. They have medical and they have insurance, or well, they have insurance and they have
Yeah.
financial support. So he
Yeah.
did this for his children.
Wow.
That's interesting. And I'm going to tell you, I'm sure he's not the first.
No, but I think what an incredible, yeah, what an incredible gift, you know? Like I'm sitting here thinking like that's very giving and very self, selfless,
I
you
would
know.
agree with that, Casey. I would agree
Yeah.
with that as
Yeah.
well. And there's a little bit this because this story is interesting because keep going. So you guys get married after dating for how long?
6 months.
Love this. So she just, I wish you guys are gonna have to watch this on YouTube because she just shrugged her shoulders. It was really cute. She's like, and
Yeah, we, but I
then
guess when you know, you know.
yeah.
So it was kind of like, why wait? And in the military, things move quickly in relationships. Yeah.
Literally, somebody said that yesterday. Similar kind of thing. And ours, so the baby sister, we're sorry, Emily wasn't able to be here. And so, same for her. I mean, she had known her husband. She was married to the Air Force. And I always joke that she was married
Okay.
to the Air Force. And so, but you're right. Military moves fast. And I think that's for our listeners, you know, this is like important to know. If you don't know someone, like it is a fast-paced life. And it is unpredictable life, as you know, you
Extremely.
so you all met and then you got married after 6 months, and then what happened?
And then he deployed to Afghanistan just a few months after that.
Yeah.
The day before he went to Afghanistan, we found out that we were pregnant with our first baby.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Yep.
so it was crazy.
Wow.
Wow.
I'll say this because people won't know this. Emily was pregnant with Owen while her and Emily has an ex-husband while her ex-husband was deployed. I wish Emily was here to say that because she would be like, girl.
Right. She'd be like, I know there's so many women that go through it. I was lucky that he got to come home. A captain had given up his space for him to come home so he could be home for the birth of the baby.
Wow.
So we are the luckiest in some terms, you
Yeah,
know.
it ebbs and flows. And so you're pregnant, and because I'm like, I guess I've heard Casey's story a little bit before, and so that's why I'm so excited because we get to dive deeper. And so you're pregnant during this time, and who's your support? I mean, because who's your
So
support?
they had sent me back to Southern California.
Okay.
My mom was pretty much my support system. I had my siblings there.
Okay.
But I was back in my mom's home putting a baby bassinet together in the room I grew up in, thinking, I'm going to have a baby and I'm going to be pretty much like a single mom. There's no way my husband's going to come home for the birth. So I'm thinking I'm going to have this baby in California and that's going to be it. And that is not what happened at all.
Okay.
I literally got a call and I was told, if you can be in Washington in 72 hours, we'll send him on a plane home.
So what happened? So why do we have to get back to Washington?
Because that's his duty station.
Okay.
So I left the duty station to be with family, to get support while I was pregnant. So going back was the only way that they would send him forward. It's,
Gotcha.
they always say sending forward, sending
Yeah. Right.
forward.
Right.
So that's the only way that they would send him home.
Gotcha.
And so I had to, my best friend jumps in the car with me. and drives me because I'm too big to get behind its steering wheel. And my best friend drives me all the way back to Washington State.
So he, that is, they were sending him home because of he had been involved in the IED explosion, correct?
No,
not
they
yet.
They kept him in Afghanistan. So I was about 5 to 6 months pregnant when he was in the IED explosion. Okay. July 22nd, 2012, okay. He was in the IED explosion. We'd only been married, goodness, for a few months, like only not even a year. Okay. And I got a phone call and it was him. Normally, it's supposed to be the military calling you. Mm-hmm. And so I get a phone call. Are you sitting down? And I'm like, oh God, oh God. And I'm thinking, okay, he's alive because he's talking to me.
Right.
But what's going to happen? Who from his squad is gone? What happened? Mm-hmm. And he goes, are you sitting down? Is your mom next to you? And I'm like, and my mom looks over at me and she goes, oh shit. Sorry.
Yeah. You're good. It's okay.
Apologies. Keep going. Keep going.
So he then goes, I was in an IED explosion today. They think I have a TBI. I can't be on the phone very long. Can you call my mom and dad? And then he said, I love you. And he hung up the phone.
Wow.
Yeah.
Like if you want to know how caregiving starts, it's in that second. It's in the, because people think it's like the activity. It's in that second, that split second of something significant. And it's different for everybody, but it was the same way. Jason walked in. How'd it go? They think I have cancer. In that moment, your life changes and you are 5 months pregnant.
Yep. So of course, my mom's looking at me going, put your feet up, do something. Do not bring that stress onto that baby because that's really important. And I'm like, oh my God. Then I get a call a couple weeks later saying, this is the United States Army. Your husband's been in an explosion. And I'm sitting here going, oh my God, again. So I'm losing my mind thinking, oh my God, he's been in another IED explosion. Mm-hmm. But he hadn't. He had just been, they just took forever to notify me.
So I want to make sure I'm clear. I got to get my storyline straight here for a second. He calls you in July 22nd. Mm-hmm. And he says, you get 60 seconds equivalent is what it probably felt like. You get no real information. And then the military calls a couple of weeks later. Is there any conversations with him in between? Because he's still, you said he was in Afghanistan. Is there any conversations with him in between the later notification? Just FYI, in case you didn't realize your husband was in an explosion.
Yeah. So we got to actually, while he was in the hospital, we got to talk all the time, which was rare because we hadn't been able to communicate. So he actually spent his birthday, which was the day after he was blown up, in the hospital. So he goes, the Army gave me a birthday present. And, you know, yeah, but he got to see, we got to actually video call a few times when he got to the MWR.
Okay.
So we were keeping in contact and then they released him back to duty 2 weeks later.
Okay.
So they diagnosed the TBA. They said possible TBI. He had some abrasions. He had bit his tongue. And so he had a hole in his tongue. So they waited until all of that healed. That side of the vehicle where he hit his knee. Mm-hmm. So they said possible TBI. And then they were like, okay, all done. And they sent him back to, and he spent another 6 months in Afghanistan.
Okay. So you get the call and you go back to Washington, I'm assuming. And the baby has been born. Your first son has been born?
Yep. So, yeah. So he comes, well, he made it home. He made it home for the birth. Great. So, yeah. And a few weeks later, I just noticed, I'm like, something's not right.
Okay.
We lived in an awful little house, you know, as you always do, you know, you live in an awful apartment or an awful little house when you first get started. We just lived in this terrible, teeny tiny little house. And we brought Harrison, our oldest, home. And we had neighbors who had this really awful, loud party. Mm-hmm. And Steven, they shot off some fireworks. Mm. And Steven crawled under the bed. And I was like, it's fireworks. And then we had a really bad windstorm. And he stood over our son to try to protect him, drenched in sweat, panicked, thinking that he was back in Afghanistan with a baby. And so he was like hiding our son, trying to protect him. And that's when I knew. I was like, something's not right.
So that's when it started, Casey, like this journey, because Stephen's not out until 2021. So he's still correct. Active duty. So you have a child, you have a new baby. During this time, you all also have another son. But what is these symptoms progress? Because where Stephen is now, when we've talked, he's progressed to where the symptoms are, they almost mimic dementia. And so how has he progressed? What's going on with you? Because he's in the military, you're caring for two kids. Tell us about that space. What's going on with you? Are you working?
So I worked on and off. Yeah. Getting stable work for a military spouse is extremely difficult.
Exactly.
Yeah. Our hire rate and unemployability rate is so much higher than the national average. Mm-hmm. So, and it's because nobody wants to hire anybody who won't be there long term.
Right.
So, you know, I can go into a job. I have a degree. Mm-hmm. I could go, I've worked in an industry, so I have experience. And I was always told no. And the reason why was because it was like, once you get the hang of things, once you're in it, you're going to move.
Yeah.
So it was okay. Bye, career.
Yeah.
I wound up running a daycare inside my home when I lived on a military installation. Mm-hmm. Hated that. We'll never do that ever again. I've worked with kids before, but it was just, it wasn't a good situation.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then I did a lot of, contracting.
Okay.
So what I could get to scrounge up a little bit of something, but it wasn't a lot. So we're living on one income.
Yeah.
But Stephen progressed, his progression was, the Army never did any follow-up. So mm-hmm. their policy is to rescreen when they come back into country. So they're supposed to be doing screenings when these guys come back. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, Stephen fell through the cracks.
Mm. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nature's Medicine for Modern Living, a people and plants dialogue hosted by Sophie.Health. At Sophie, we bring together experts and voices who rarely cross paths. Our quest is to illuminate the ancient world of plant medicine and reimagine it for the connected age. Join us to explore new boundaries of digital personalized medicine with deep roots in the natural world, and hear from our community of international pioneers who are validating this new paradigm and improving how we feel, sleep, and cope with daily stresses naturally. Sophie.Health, reconnecting people and plants.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And so I'm the only one sitting here begging, saying something's not right. Somebody please help him.
Yeah.
Something's not right. But out of fear, he's just masking and masking and saying, I can get through this. If I can just get through the day, I'm fine. And I mean, there are climbing under the beds when our neighbors are playing their really loud surround sound. And in the military, they're townhomes, so you're attached. So when your walls are shaking and your husband's under the bed, what do you do? So that's the hard part about military life too. So he would start, he started in Washington State getting help and saying, I need help. I'm so angry.
Okay.
And so he'd started counseling, and then they'd move us. For the Army, a lot of families only average 3 years. We averaged two.
Okay.
So he came back from Washington. Harrison was 6 or 7 months old, and we were at the next duty station. So we went to Kansas. We were there in Kansas for 2 years, and he went back to the Middle East. He went to Kuwait.
I was afraid you were going to say, I was going to ask if he was deployed again.
Yep.
Well, but if there's nothing wrong, but let me ask you this. I mean, you said he went back to Kuwait, but like, what are the things that you're like, cause I want to make sure like, these are the things that are important, because especially if this mimics dementia or it doesn't even matter. He's got PTSD probably. Well, I know he has PTSD. And so I'm assuming he was undiagnosed PTSD. Yes, we know he had a TBI, but that was pretty much the limit. He goes to a clinician to seek therapy. What are you doing like as a caregiver? Because you're dual role. You're not just wife at this point. How are you helping him to manage the symptoms? Or honestly, it sounds like to mask, hide, or to dampen the symptoms as much as possible. Because I know you're at that point, you're caregiving for him. Wives of military folks or spouses of military folks are absolutely caregiving to them, because it's a different type of job experience.
Right. So I honestly didn't know much about the TBI. Mm-hmm. I thought it was mostly PTSD. Okay. So I was just, can you please go get help? Please go get help. And because I'm sitting here begging him to get help, because I know something's not right. I know he's triggered. I know there's things that aren't happening. I'm just begging for help at this point. Mm-hmm. And I'm begging him to get help, because he's terrified that if he gets any formal counseling, that he'll be kicked out of the service.
Gotcha. Yeah. So there is definitely stigma around mental health and service. And is he on any medications?
Yes. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Because typically there's medications are frowned, from my understanding is, and this is historical, whether it's now or not, place to place, an individual experience. I want to make sure we're not implying that this is status quo. We are just saying this is Casey's experience.
Yes. Oh yeah. When he started taking medication, and so we went from Washington to Kansas. In Kansas, he did start counseling. They actually, come to find out years later, they wanted to start processing him for a medical retirement then.
Okay.
No, we did not know. So it was a doctor later, years later, who was going through his medical history, who said, I see that they were trying to start the med board process then. And they kept him in the Army for 6 more years.
Wow.
So he was being seen at the TBI clinic in Kansas, and nobody told us he was in the TBI clinic in Kansas. They just said it was regular counseling. So when he came down, when he left and went to Kuwait for another 9-month deployment, when he came back from Kuwait, we immediately got orders to Alaska. So there was no continuation of care. There's no continuity of care.
Right.
So that got dropped because we were gone. And it wasn't like the doctors were like, hey, Alaska, that you need to med board this guy. So we get to Alaska and things get really hairy.
Okay.
So I got pregnant again in Alaska. Well, I got pregnant in Kansas. We lost that baby. And then we get to Alaska and we get pregnant again with Byron, the dragon. And then he actually was like, I can't do this anymore. So he's aggressive, angry, just hating the world. And a lot of that got taken out on me. It was, and of course, because who's the only one saying, please get help? I love you so much. Please get help.
Yeah.
It's me, you know, there was a lot of resentment that was built up because it was like, stop, I'm fine. And it was like, you're not fine. And I just want you to be healthy. And while we were in Alaska, I mean, the meds, you know, if you're taking PTSD meds and you have a traumatic brain injury, that affects your brain chemistry.
Right.
And TBI meds are more suitable when you have a TBI. So I got my uncle actually contacted me and was like, hey, I wrote this paper about the military and about how there's a lax on screening for traumatic brain injuries. And it sounds like what you're going through is exactly what I wrote this about. So I was like, send it. So I remember reading it and going, oh my God, he has a TBI. And so it was like, okay, this is a much more severe TBI than we all thought. You know, we thought this is just, you know, it's fine. But the more research I did about traumatic brain injuries, I was like, this is what the problem is. He's irritable. He's got, you know, he's impulsive. So it was like, okay, all of these symptoms match versus PTSD. And that's hard because they mirror each other. Mm-hmm. But with PTSD, through counseling and therapy and some medication, you can get better. With traumatic brain injury, the way that it was explained to me that I could really understand is, you know, you have a bridge that you go over every day. When you have a trauma, when trauma happens to the brain, that bridge is disintegrated. So there's no more pieces. You can't pick anything up. There's no more bridge. It's gone.
Right.
And so that's where the real advocation on my part started, where it was like, okay, you need help. And that was the first time that he actually, in Alaska, he got medication, which you're right. He was berated for that by his chain of command. It was not good. It was really intense in Alaska. As much as we loved the place,
yeah,
where what we were going through was not easy. And in an overseas duty station, and they consider Alaska overseas, you're only there for 3 years. That's it, period. The day that you're over, you're gone. So we finally get this under control. We finally start getting him the right medication. We finally start talking to people who are like, okay, this is happening. And luckily, they had sent him to an outpatient program in Washington State, where it all happens. But those doctors notice, like, okay, this isn't PTSD. This guy, something's wrong. And then we get orders again.
So at what year is that? What year is that, if you don't mind?
7 or 8.
Okay.
It all gets really blurry.
That's okay.
So, you know, yeah. So we get to, we start getting ready to leave in 2020, the year that everybody, you know, hates hearing about. So we start leaving 2019, getting ready to move. We literally just missed all the crazy stuff as traveling. So we didn't get COVID as we traveled. And we got to Fort Sill, Oklahoma. And that's where, like, the really dark side happened. And through all the COVID shutdowns and restrictions and everything else, and doctors not listening to him at that point, where he's like, I think I have a TBI. I think my wife was right. I think I have a TBI. He gets a TBI screening, and the doctor goes, yeah, you've got a TBI. So thankfully, the doctor was like, yeah, this is happening. And then he gets a new medications doctor. And that doctor is a godsend. That's the doctor who was like, something's wrong. But before that, right before that, he had an episode and he attempted suicide. Mm-hmm. So that was it was a brother in arms that saved him. An EMT who just happened to have been a former service member showed up. So, because I was terrified, I didn't know what to do. So I called 911 because I was like, I need help.
Yeah.
So thank goodness, like, an EMT showed up and he was a brother in arms.
So Casey, we're talking about at, because he Stephen is that part of the story, but you have this spouse here. There's, and I hear like the anger, the outburst, the hiding under the bed. You guys have been moved. Where are you? And now you have a, you have two kids. And
not physically, not location.
Not location.
Where are you?
Yeah, because now mentally, he's attempting suicide now. And I mean, are you thinking, why are you leaving me? Why, what have I not done? What's your mindset?
Oh, all of that, all of it. So I'm just sitting here, like for years, I was pretty much in a state of, I felt like I was in the Twilight Zone. Nobody's listening. This is happening. How much more can I do for him? Right now, at this point, he hates me because I'm the only one saying something's wrong. So I was in a really bad place. I was actually wound up being diagnosed after Byron was born, our second son, with major depression because I had gone years feeling like I was crazy.
How is your physical health? Because I think about caregivers and the stress that caregiver has on the body. Cause you're not are you taking care of yourself?
For a while I was, I mean, you know, I hiked for a living before I met him. Mm-hmm. And I went from being extremely active to completely inactive. Yeah. So when we got to Fort Sill, when everything happened, I think my body had just had enough. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I still have to get up. I still have to take care of two little boys, but I was definitely not in a good place. I had self-isolated from, you know, I don't fit in the normal sense of the military world. Same. So there was a lot of self-isolation because I couldn't find good connections. There are literally two women from the 10 years that he was in the service that I absolutely adore, but we weren't in the same places at the same time to talk to them. Yeah. So, I mean, I had maybe like one person to reach out to, and I did go to counseling through all of this, but again, it was sporadic. So No, I was in an awful place. I felt crazy. It took 10 years to finally feel like validated. So it was awful.
In the information that you gave us, you said you were officially his caregiver in 21. What does that mean? Yeah. Why do you put that official title on there?
Because that's when I, you know, really actually got placed in the role. And when I say 2020, when I started getting paid to care for him.
That's fair. Yeah.
What does that mean? I think that's important because most civilians are not going to know what you mean. Like when I got paid to care for him. So,
well, yeah. So we don't qualify through the VA for the caregiver program. That's very, they're going through a lot over there. So I actually get paid to take care of him through the state.
Okay.
Because Stephen has, you know, so he went pretty much 10 years with a TBI. Undiagnosed, well, diagnosed, but untreated. And when you don't treat a TBI immediately, things progress in a negative way.
Right.
You have to be, yeah. So you have to rebuild those pathways as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. So he was rudderless for 10 years mm-hmm. and only using the coping skills and coping mechanisms that he had available to him.
Yeah. Right.
So when I say officially, it's when things turned a corner, when the military was no longer, like moving around was no longer an obstacle.
Right.
When we're finally settled and can get proper care. And so, like I said, I'm paid through the state to give him care because, like I said, he's pretty much like a dementia. He can't remember things. He walked out of the other, and I asked if it was okay for me to say this. He walked out of the house just several months ago without pants on.
Mm. Yeah.
So it was like, you never want to be that parent you never want to be that partner who's like, hey, you're missing your pants. So it was, Hey, you walked out the door without something. You want to think about what you're missing? And he was like, I got my hat. I got my car keys. And I was like,
Wow.
How old is Stephen?
Yeah.
He's 38.
That's what I thought.
He's 38. Yeah. So yeah. And being thrust into a role at such a young age, that's hard. Yeah. Knowing like this is our life. This is our life.
This is interesting, Casey, because you all ultimately, he gets discharged, medically discharged, and you all decide to move to Virginia. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's because it is, yep. And that's because you have family there to be able to provide additional support. But the other thing that's so interesting about this, and Jay, we've never talked to anybody about this, is, you know, we talk about sandwich generation caregivers for parents and children, but you're a different kind of sandwich. You're spouse and children, because your baby nuggets are still children now.
Yes.
They're still children.
Yep. And they're neurodivergent. So, right.
So yeah. That makes you double caregiver, by the way, because caregivers are also identified with as, you know, if they care for individuals who have some level of identified disability, because there's more than, it's not that there's something wrong with them. It's that there's more than, and it's outside of the traditional, you know, childhood development. And so you're caring for your husband. And I say this respectfully, making sure he's got his pants on. Cause I mean, it technically I'm going to say, Casey, I'm going to line up with him on this one. The signs on the store windows only say shirt and shoes. Okay. So I'm gonna say I've always found that odd that they never required pants. I'm going with Stephen on this one. So pants are optional. And then you've got baby nuggets. It's what I always call kids, baby nuggets. And your baby nuggets have different needs. And then that doesn't even count the 14 chickens, because you thought, why not care for a whole yeah, bunch more? Yeah. Like, you are like a caring machine.
Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden. Ant and Deck, Fish and Chips, Mum and Dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle Magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle Magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Well, you know, it's actually what's he wanted the chickens, but chickens, and we also have bees, but chickens and bees help with SUD levels. So I can send him, if I'm having a really hard day with him and he won't calm down, I can go say, please go talk to the chickens. And it's something in their purring. It's like a cat, but there's something mm-hmm. in their purrs and their little that like soothes people. Wow. So, and if I'm really having a hard time, I tell him to go sit with the bees, because the buzzing of the bees is actually, it calms. Isn't and it? So it was like, go, go sit with your bees, go check on them, leave me alone. And I'm allergic to bees, so that was a pretty big commitment.
Well, and that's part of your, you know, when I talked about all the different things, you guys are hobby farmers, you are, you're restoring an old farmhouse, you also homeschool. So I'm just like, that is, I'm in awe. But there are all these things, Casey, that, you know, you had a career before, you've put into place to try and get a norm back. I mean, I'm just, first of all, I'm in awe, but there are a lot of things that Stephen, I guess, you know, we talk about, and I know, you know, Stephen has, we talk about his symptoms. He has outbursts. There are a lot of different things going on with him. How are you coping with that to try and, do you guys, you know, go out? Do you, you know, what's marriage look like now, I guess, is the easy thing. Because you guys are, you know, late 30s. What's your marriage? What's your normal?
I know, we're 30. We're in our 30s and it feels like we're in our, you know, 60s.
Yeah.
But so it's hard. It's hard to balance that because, yeah, you know, it's hard to balance caregiver and wife. Mm-hmm. And we struggle. But one of the biggest things is healing strides has been a major component in that. When I found them, they've just come in and helped fill those gaps. Mm. They don't just take care of Stephen. They don't just take care of me. They take care of the boys too. Yeah. So, you know, when I've got the kids taken care of, but they've provided counseling services for an entire family for free. Mm. So we've gotten into that room, and it's about learning to better communicate as a family.
Yeah.
So that's been essential to our healing, especially as a couple, because Stephen doesn't translate some of those things that, you know, like, hey, I love you, but you just stacked all of your clothes in a pile. And that's a problem because now I don't know where everything is. I see that you're trying to help, but maybe we can be successful in a different way.
That was so nice.
Really good way. Like, maybe you can be successful in a different way. And, you know, here's the thing, because for some people, you'd be like, that sounds condescending. No, not remotely condescending. It's called kindness. And when you say, it's all about voice inflection. And like, when you try to help someone, because, you know, it's like the whole, the phrase, you know, never in the history of the world has telling someone to calm down, you know, when they're not calm has ever worked. I'm not calming down. And so you have to think about strategies, which has got to be, Casey, emotionally and physically, like not even physically, the emotional roller coaster and the kind of juggling of, okay, Stephen's up, because I'm assuming you're on constant supervision of him to assess, yeah, where his moods and where he's at, not literally, yeah, just physically, but also emotionally.
Yeah, it's hard to leave him. Like, I don't feel safe leaving him at home ever. So I rely heavily on my poor little neighbors, whom we've, you know, they're family now. And nanny cams. But it is hard. And one of the biggest things is he's on suicide watch all the time. You know, they ask questions when you're going through the process of becoming a caregiver to just make the small amount of money to help your family. Mm-hmm. They'll ask the person with the brain injury, do you know what happens when there's smoke in a room? And they're supposed to say, well, yeah, you like, it's a, it means there's a fire and I should leave. But with someone like Stephen, he may say, this is a great opportunity to go out just to end it all. And on a bad day, it could be, I'm just not going to leave today. Mm-hmm. So it's that constant supervision and it's terrifying. And when he's having a bad day there, those are those moments. But that's why, like you said, the way that we talk to each other is so important, because even with a dementia patient, like even with somebody who has dementia, they want to go outside or, you know, they say, I have to go home now.
Yeah.
You know, and you are home. But to them, they're in a state where they may think that they're a child again. And they think, I've got to go see mom and dad, and mom and dad are gone. Mm-hmm. And so Oh, I understand that you want to go home. I really need some help really quick. I need to get some dishes out. Would you mind helping me with that before you leave? And then, we're now changing the direction and the pattern. So, when Stephen was without pants, hey, would you like to come get your wallet before you go? And, he's sitting here tapping his legs and he goes, oh, I don't have pants on.
Let me ask you this. How does it affect the boys? How has this affected your relationship with the boys, his relationship with the boys? Because I would say at some level, they are also puppy caregivers. They support him as well. They've learned him as well, and they support, you're not making them be a caregiver, whatever, but they are.
They are. It's hard because I want them to be children. I want them to experience everything that a child can, and I want to shield them from a lot of this. But what I can say about my boys, especially after this loss that we've experienced, their level of compassion, I've never seen in children their age before. Harrison is a bit harder. Harrison got to experience a lot of the military. So Harrison has a little more anxiety. He's a little more cautious. Whereas Byron just tells it like it is. He lives his life the way a 6-year-old would live. But Byron can bring down the house with his compassion. This child can step into a room and just say, "Daddy, I see you're having a bad day. You need a hug." And it's just like, and he they're just in the room together, and he just kind of sees that switch, and he did, "Dada, Dada, I love you and need a hug." And Harrison wise beyond his years. So, I mean, if I am at the grocery store and the neighbors have got me, Harrison, if there's something, Harrison's like, "Mom, Dad walked out the door." Oh, okay. So it's definitely terrifying. I don't want my children to be scarred by any of this, but I think we're going in the right direction. Our family is exceptionally close-knit. And I think that the best thing about my kids and my family is that we lead with love. So it's never, we get frustrated, we fight. But I think the biggest thing is that we always lead with love. I love you enough to recognize you're having a bad day. I love you enough to give you the grace and the space to take a minute to breathe and collect your thoughts. And our kids, I'm always terrified that something, I'm always terrified we're going to mess them up. But they are re remarkably compassionate. And I'm just thankful for who they are. I don't want to get emotional.
No, you're good. I know that I know that you guys recently lost Stephen's stepfather, which was you said, a tremendous support. And I worry about you because you have your neighbors for support. Tell me about the support systems that you all have in place, or what's missing and what you feel, because I know you're a big advocate. What's missing, and what discharged, medically discharged family members, caregivers, what you all need.
It's different for each veteran. It's different for each family. I think the biggest thing is connection. And I think we are all missing that, especially, COVID decimated people's ability to connect. So I think we're all missing that. We've been able to find a lot of that, but I think for me as a caregiver, I don't give myself enough time for me. So giving myself time for space and grace, I get an hour pretty much off, and that's spent hugging a horse. So I choose to spend my time literally at healing strides.
Is that an hour? That's not an hour a day. That's an hour a week. What it?
It's an hour a week.
So the other 157 hours of the day of the week, because there's 158 hours that on your shift, by the way, your shift is 158 hours and the number of hours per week. But you give yourself An hour. And oh, and you get to sleep sometimes, right?
Yeah, sometimes. Well, I mean, he has nightmares. So
yeah, that's, I assumed. I just thought I'd go ahead and throw that out there. So
yeah,
I really appreciate, you know, it is the plight and it is the commonality that we all have, rather it's who, it doesn't matter who you're a caregiver for. It is space and grace for ourselves.
Yeah. It's hard. It's hard because it also comes with a sense of guilt. Like it comes with that sense of guilt. If I take this time for myself, what happens if something happens? Mm. And so it's hard to learn to find a balance, and it's hard to find an out. And when we were working with just our counselor, she kept saying, "Casey, how can you find your out?" So I have a big gigantic garden that I go and we've planted, and I go into the cut garden and I stroll through the cut garden and I make bouquets. And that's what I do to get to breathe. And I have to make sure to vocalize, okay, mommy's going into the garden today by herself. So I know that you guys want to be with me, but I'm going to go cut flowers for typically the barn for Healing Strides by myself. And that's how I get it. That's how I get that space. So I'm limited. I don't get as much space as I typically need, but I do. They know I take timeouts too. Mommy's taking a timeout and I'm going to go and watch a movie on my phone.
On my phone.
Yeah.
I feel like we could talk to JJ. I feel like we could talk to Casey for like 10 years. Like there's so much, and it's so, I mean, you've set yourself up in this environment, you know, where you live in rural Southwest Virginia. That's where I'm from. That's how I met Casey. And you've set yourself and you're trying to, you've curated. It's interesting. You're curating the environment to try to support, give your husband the best possible environment that supports his needs.
Yes.
That he probably doesn't even realize. And from the flowers to the bees, to the chickens, to the, you know, with the words that you use, you're always on. You are the reason we did this series. Like you are the hero, Casey. You're a hero too. Your husband, so hero. Hero. You're a hero too. Thank and you. So, Jay, I want to move on to sister questions. I hate to move on. I want to go out and hang out with the bees, be honest with you, because there are some days I need some bees for my own mental health.
We'll lend you the bee suit.
So, Casey, for some reason, you are restoring a 1910 farmhouse. In her free time. So, favorite project so far?
Ooh, good one.
That's hard. Oh, the hallway, probably our hallway.
Okay.
it's what we fell in love with, how we fell in love with the house. So it's a 1910, but it's a folk Victorian.
Mm-hmm.
And so the staircase has these gorgeous spindles, and we bought this beautiful wallpaper. I'm obsessed with peonies. And so I have peony wallpaper. So I just didn't, I loved putting that together. And it was an easy project too. Hard, but easy.
Yeah. Immediate joy. Once you got it done, you were like, my peonies are up.
Yeah. Well, I stand in there. We stand in there to take pictures. Yeah. We stand in there to take pictures all the time. Oh, right now it's got witches' hats and candles hanging from the ceiling.
That's awesome.
I support that.
Now, I love it.
Definitely have to have photos of the house, because that would be fun to put along and add into our posts and on the website.
Little joy.
Here's my question. Here's my big question is, what is your favorite guilty pleasure? The thing that you do just for yourself, it's only yours, you love it, and you're like, I'm not sharing this with anybody, it's just me.
There's a series on Amazon called Wheel of Time.
Yes.
And that's for me. I kick everybody out and I close the door. And I hang out with my cat, my black cat Max, and I lay in bed and watch it together.
Got That's a it. good series. That's a good yeah. series. Thank you, Netflix. Netflix has no clue. And I mean, there's other streaming stations, but Netflix, the reality is Netflix has no clue how much they support caregivers. That my favorite is Hallmark. That's my guilty pleasure. And Jason is like, you know, you want me to tell you how it ends? I'm like, shut it. Fall festival. Shut it. I tried to get on the Hallmark Christmas cruise and two full ships sold out. And I'm going to tell you, they should have called it the Hallmark Christmas caregiver cruise, because I was all about bringing my sweaters to the Bahamas and doing, you know, hot chocolate
love
and all stuff. I love it. Casey, thank you so much for being here with us. This was just, and just giving so much of your most authentic self. You just shared so much, and we love you. We love Steven. We love the boys, the chickens, the bees, the 15 dogs and cats and all that greatness.
Well, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. All right, guys, until we confess again, thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to our special series, Heroes Caring for Heroes, on UK Health Radio. But before you go, please take a moment to leave us a review and tell your friends about the Confessions podcast. And don't forget, visit our website to find caregiver resources, learn about our discount program, and sign up for the newsletter. Make sure you connect with us on your favorite social media site to stay up to date on all things caregiving. And of course, you'll find the video recording of our episodes on the Confessions website and our YouTube channel. We'll see you next time when we confess again.